reminding us about what he's done to take care of our sin problem. What a great thing that is. And that mirrors, and we didn't plan this, but it was well done, that mirrors what I wanted to introduce the message with. And it is this, from Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. What a blessed thing it is to know that we are in the company. Perhaps you don't see them right now, but we are in the company of a great cloud of witnesses who have gone on before us. And I think of people in my life that are among that cloud when I think about them, because my mom and dad are in that cloud. My mother-in-law's in that cloud. I can't start down the list of everybody, but those are some people that are precious to me that I know that are in that cloud. And you have family and friends that are part of that cloud too, that are surrounding us as we run this race and walk this walk. Our associations and our focus help us immeasurably as we go forward with Christ. We want to talk about those associations today, because they can also drag us down if we choose them poorly. We're going to be reflecting on Proverbs chapter 6 today. And as you see it, I want you to be looking for three different kinds of associations that can be troublesome as we walk. But let me read beginning. I'm not going to read the whole thing all in one sitting. I'll read and then talk and then read and then talk, and we'll get through it all by the end. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself. For you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. And the first kind of people that we need to be careful about associating with are people who have an ability to get their financial claws into our lives. Guard against indebtedness is one way to say it. But the broader thing to say is, watch out for financial associations that are harmful in your life. Jill Ireland is a famous model. She's graced the pages of the Sports Illustrated magazine in the past. She has been on innumerable cover girl type magazines. She has been a magnificently successful model. According to an article that I read about her this week, she has an estate that is valued at $420 million. All because she looks good and knows how to get a good picture taken. I can't do it, so I'm not putting her down. But this week, she filed a lawsuit against a long-term associate who had bilked her estate in excess of $100 million. Somebody that she had trusted for a number of years, and she had just let him go with her finances. She didn't discover it until her own grandson came and asked her for a loan. And as she was preparing to give her grandson the loan, she found out about the discrepancies. Billy Joel, whether you like what he stands for or not, it's hard not to like some of the music that he puts out. Heaven only knows how much he's worth just for singing songs like Piano Man. Marvelous talent, but not very good at picking people he associates with financially. Similarly to Jill, he had a business manager that stole from him almost $90 million. Now, I'm still hopeful that maybe by the end of my life I can put one of those $1 million together. I can't imagine what it's like to have somebody steal 90 of them from you, or 100. Those are stories that are almost so out there, they're hard to relate to. So I'll bring it back to a couple of more, and these are people I don't know personally, but I know of. So it's not like they were just on the pages of a newspaper to me. A grandmother had been having her granddaughter come over for a number of years every week to do her hair. And they had great times together, and grandma liked how her hair, but she liked even more that she got to spend time with her granddaughter. And after she'd done that, the granddaughter said to her grandma, Grandma, I'm thinking that I would like to open a hair salon. And of course, grandma's liked her hair, and she thinks her granddaughter's got all kinds of talent, and maybe she does. I'm not here to question that. But the granddaughter says to grandma, you know, in order for me to do this, I have to take out a loan. And the bank wants somebody to sign the loan with me. And the granddaughter says, now, they don't want any of your money, which immediately should have her ears perk up. Because when a bank says they don't want any of your money, something's haywire. When they're making a loan and they say they don't want your money, don't believe them. They definitely want to get the loan money back. Plus. But anyway, grandma, she loves her granddaughter. The granddaughter loves her grandma. It's not like this is an adversarial relationship. And so grandma says, honey, I'd be glad to sign that note. Well, it wasn't because the granddaughter wasn't a good hairdresser or whatever else, but the salon never succeeded. And then the bank did want their money. And the granddaughter didn't have it. So where are they going to get their money? To the other person who signed the note. You might say, this is not good, but it's the way the law is. I've got a reading here from the Federal Trade Commission warning about these kind of arrangements. Think carefully before you guarantee a debt. This ought to be, just don't do it. If the borrower does not pay the debt, you will have to. Be sure you can afford to pay if you have to, and that you want to accept this responsibility. You may have to pay up to the full amount of the debt if the borrower does not pay. You may also have to pay late fees or collection costs, which increase this amount. The creditor can collect this debt from you without first trying to collect from the borrower. The creditor can use the same collection methods against you that can be used against the borrower, such as suing you, garnishing your wages, etc. This grandmother lost, and she is in her 70s by the time this is happening. She lost $250,000. $90 million and $100 million almost doesn't matter to some people. But $250,000 matters to a grandma. And it wasn't because they did something between parties where they didn't like each other. They loved each other. They didn't want to hurt each other. But grandma lost $250,000 because she got enmeshed in a financial arrangement that she should never have. What happens when the arrangements are adversarial? And it's not a bank coming to collect, but it is a thug on a street who comes to collect. The word of this day for this is, watch out for the financial arrangements you make between you and someone else. Be careful, because those financial arrangements can harm you and they can minimize your ability to follow Christ, because you've become so fixated on that situation that you stop looking up. And you stop seeing the author and perfecter of your faith. And so, this particular passage, guarding against indebtedness or other financial arrangements, leads to some thoughts. First of all, generosity is good, but folly is not. Getting involved foolishly in financial arrangements is folly. Make sure you really want to get involved in this. Lips have a way of entrapping people into the arrangements. If you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, when you say to somebody, yeah, I'll do that. I've known parents that really do love their children, who've been asked different times to co-sign notes for a house so that a child can make a purchase. Can I give you advice here? Don't do it. It doesn't mean you don't love your child. If you want to, give them the money. Just give it to them. But don't sign the note, because it is a word that ensnares you into a responsibility that you may not be able to get out of. Why is this important? It is because of a charge that the Scriptures give us to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, then all these things will be added to you. It's a reminder of the Scriptures that you cannot serve both God and money. For you will love one and hate the other, and hate one and love the other. But you can't do it for both of them at the same time. If you are in the midst of an arrangement like this, get free. Get free of it. Whether it's with a child or a grandchild or some other entity, do all you can. Work hard. Get free of it. I am not a predictor of how finances are going to go. I don't know these things. It's way beyond my ken to figure out these finances. But I will tell you what rests in the back of my mind, and that is, societally, we've got a pyramid that's upside down financially. And my counsel to you would be, do whatever you can to get unmeshed with debt. Because if things go badly, somebody's going to come looking for that money, and they're not going to be happy when you say, I can't give it to you. Start taking all the steps that you can to get free of it. If you are indebted, do what you can to pay it off. If you're committed in a relationship financially, get free of it, so that you are free to follow Christ and look at the author and perfecter of your faith, and unencumbered, do what He calls you to do. Wisdom guards against financial encumbrances that are unhealthy. And wisdom guards against idleness. Look at this next section, beginning in verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Sluggard is such a fun word. I mean, it's not a word that you use in casual conversation, but if you can use it at Walmart, it's a good one. You sluggard, you. I mean, it has this air of wanting to really criticize somebody's behavior, but it doesn't exactly sound like an insult. It's just a reference, but it's a strong one. And it's about somebody who doesn't do anything, like those pirates who don't do anything that the VeggieTales characters sing about. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, She prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a robber, and want like an armed man. Guard against idleness. Rest is good. Laziness is not. There are times when I think it would have been nice to have not grown up milking cows. Not having to be out there at 5:30 every morning and 4:30 every afternoon for all my pre-college life. Do I sound bitter? There are days when I am. When I went away to college, Dad sold the herd, and I have always thought, you could have done this last year. I would have liked that, I think. But I do have to admit one thing. Milking cows and growing up on a farm taught me how to work. My kids have from time to time said to me, Dad, what did you do when you were a kid? And I said, I worked. I helped milk cows. I went out and I walked the bean fields and I cut the weeds out because we couldn't spray for weeds back then with our beans. And my grandma was insistent. You know, she could work me under the table. My grandma was a tough lady. And I could never say to her, Grandma, I'm tired. She would not have understood. And she always seemed like she came and got me. There were 8 kids, but it just seemed like it. Anyway, I worked. I worked hard. But it taught me an awful lot of good lessons. All told, I'm better off for having done that than have had nothing to do all day and have spent my days in idleness and who knows doing what because of it. Parents, by the way, find your kids jobs to do at home. I know the kids are looking at me now and say, thanks a lot, Pastor Don. But if you've got good parents, you're probably already working. Because it's healthy. And it helps. One of the things that I learned to do, by the way, is when I would have sort of time when I could choose what to do with my life, which was not very often, I learned to choose the jobs I was going to do rather than wait for Dad to tell me which job I had to do, because the job Dad had for me was invariably worse than something I would choose. I would never have chosen cleaning out the chicken coop. I would have much preferred going in and straightening the shop. Those both needed done. Pick the shop, not the chicken coop. And I also learned never to tell my dad, Dad, I'm kind of bored. That's a mistake. Because he always had something. It wasn't in his pocket, but it was in the head. There was always another job to do on the farm. It was a good life. It taught me to treasure the times that I could rest. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to most about heaven is rest. even for the times that we have things to do there, it'll be a restful experience. Rest is good, but laziness is not. Get up and work, Christians. At your job, don't look for ways to do just the bare minimum. Invest yourself into it. Because typically, I won't say this about every job, but typically, value follows effort. Not always, I know, but typically it does. But I will tell you this, satisfaction follows effort. If you're just trying to get by, you're not going to be happy doing what you do. Do what you do with good effort. Get up and work. And understand this, your work matters to God. Because you're surrounded by a cloud of witnesses that worked for Him, and you're surrounded and loved by a Lord who worked on your behalf when He went to the cross. So give Him your best effort. Not just getting by. And guard against associations that encourage idleness. Oh, they're out there. They're out there. That's the second one. One of them is guarding against associations that enmesh you in bad financial situations. The other is to guard against associations that cause you not to work. And the other is to guard against associations that prompt you to insurgency. This is a real issue in our day and age. Too many places we turn. Let me try to give you a bit of a definition. Rebelliousness, Belial, which, by the way, comes to be used as another name for the devil. Rebelliousness and devil-making are seen linked together by this word. And malevolence, afen. This is a wicked interest in harming another. So when the words are translated here that says a worthless, that's a rebellious person, a wicked man, that's a malevolent man. So this person who is rebelliously malevolent goes about with crooked speech, winks with his eyes, signals with his feet, points with his finger, with perverted heart devises evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment, he will be broken beyond healing. Guard against this kind of insurgency. Because there are people around who have this rebellious malevolence in their heart. And if you form an association with them, you will be harmed. I had a classmate when I was in seminary. this is back in the dark ages. You know, I graduated in 1986. I don't know what came of my classmate or not. We started, and we had gotten to be, I thought, fairly good friends, and we started talking about things that we wanted to be doing in ministry, and he started sharing an endeavor that he was part of, and he told me, I go down to the local bars, and I just hang out there trying to build relationships so that I can share the gospel. Which sounds on paper pretty good. I could get behind that. But then I asked him, I said, well, how many people have you been, he'd been at this for a number of months. How many people have you shared the gospel with while you're doing it? Tell me the stories. And he said, well, I actually haven't been able to share the gospel with anybody yet. I thought that's why you were going down there. But then maybe somehow or other by something you're doing, you're drawing them to Christ. Tell me about some of the endeavors that you have had with them that has maybe represented Christ in their lives. And he said, well, really haven't done anything like that. I thought that's why you were going down there. And then I had the temerity to say, you know what it sounds to me like, and I'm not an expert in hanging out in bars. It's never been my thing. But it sounds to me like you just like going down to hang out with those people in the bar. And you like to spiritualize it so it sounds like you're doing ministry. I'm pretty sure that was an accurate assessment. And I'm also pretty sure that's why that relationship ended. Because he didn't want to get challenged with it. If you're going to hang out in places where rebellious malevolence is part and parcel to the environment, it will not go well for you. I knew a young man, he was about 5 or 6 years behind me in school. So when I was a senior, he was in junior high. He attended the church that I attended growing up. He was a nice kid. He had a sweet, gentle spirit about him. And he was pretty talented as a musician. I mean, he could play better piano when he was in the sixth grade than I had ever mastered plinking out on our home keyboard. He had a nice voice when you listened to him sing. It really looked like this was somebody that could go somewhere and succeed in the music world. But he also came to the notice of a high school teacher who was engaged in a lifestyle that is not acceptable. We found a few years later that this young boy, just about ready to finish his high school, had been infected with AIDS. And the teacher had had this for some time and was on his last legs in life, and had drawn this young man into his circle and infected him. He didn't make it past his 24th birthday. This is a type of insurgency where we rebel against the order of godliness and with syrupy words draw others into it or are drawn into it. These are things that the Lord hates. And we are to guard against those kinds of associations. I know of a young high school girl. Again, I don't know her personally, but I know people that do. She had gone to school, high school, and at the end of the day, school-wise, there was a guy who was hanging around the school waiting for people that looked promising to him. And he came up to her and he said, "I got word from your folks that somebody was hurt and they're in the hospital, and can I take you to the hospital to see them?" She didn't mean badly by this. It sounded plausible. And instead of saying, "Well, let me make a phone call or let me ask somebody I know," she got in the car with him and spent the next 4 years enslaved in Denver to whatever this guy was telling her to do. Till finally she walked into a bank and a bank teller was able to recognize from things that she was doing that she was being trafficked. And the bank teller was able to contact the police, and she was rescued and taken back to her home. And the guy was arrested. And that's a good story. That's a good end. All too often, it doesn't end that well at all. And every time someone wants to try to paint you a picture of how that can be done and the woman can come out well and the guy is a kind-hearted soul, don't believe it. There are malevolent people rebelling against the very nature of God, trying to draw people into their sphere. And the people that listen to it and are drawn can be desperately harmed. And the Lord hates it. The Lord hates it. I would not want to be the guy that took that girl when he has to stand before Jesus and be judged, because it will not go well. These are perverted hearts devising evil. And we should be careful about those associations. And get away. Do everything you can to get away from those kinds of people. When they come with their syrupy tongues, just say, "I'm not listening," and walk the other way. If they try to draw you in, find a way out. Do all that you can, anything you can, to get away from these kinds of people, because they are all too common in a fallen world. Guard against them and get away from them. It is a summary statement to begin with verse 16. And it's about all of these things that I have talked about. When it says that there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. Which, by the way, I want to talk just a moment about that idiom. Because it's not a common thing to be done. And it could be somewhat confusing to say there are six things. Oh no, there's seven. It's like I watched in my youth, but I still find it funny. I almost feel guilty about it. Monty Python. They are not admirable folk. But boy, are they funny. And they do a routine with the Spanish Inquisition. And they bring out all of the weapons of their Inquisition, and they're constantly adding to the number of tools. There's one thing that we've got, and then somebody mentions, and I know two things, and then three and four and five things, and it's hilarious. And so you might be inclined to listen to this kind of an idiom and say, well, that's a funny way to say something. It's not funny at all. In fact, it's a brilliant piece of literature. Because whether it's three, then four, or five, then six, or here, six, then seven, what they're doing is placing all of the previous ones in the context of the seventh. It's a brilliant way to word things. So the seventh thing is the most important, and all of the other six feed into it, you see. So when it says there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him, and then he lists them: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness that breathes out lies. Those six feed into this last. And it's the one that the Lord cares the most about. And that is the one who sows discord among brothers. Because all of those prior six are social calamities waiting to happen, harmful realities to people. And all six of those things, bad as they are, they only serve to illustrate that discord is the greatest ill on the list in the eye of God. Churches are destroyed more by discord than they are by theological flaw. Businesses are ruined more by discord than they are by financial failings. In fact, you can get into any social relationships group that you want. And if the group can't work together, it's not going to succeed. This is why I started the message by drawing your attention to the truth that we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. We are part of an amazing group. Not just this church, though this is an amazing church in my mind, But the wider church of God for all time is an awesome entity, because we've got an awesome Lord who leads us. And that entity surrounds us as we look to Christ, the author and finisher of our faith, the older translation says it. I like it that way. Don't let other people enter into your lives that try to drag you away from that group. Don't let people enter in that disrupt. It's not that we don't have interactions with the rest of the world. If you go shopping at Walmart, you've got to interact with them. If you're involved in some school event, you've got to interact with them. You can't avoid it. If you're involved in a business dealing, you've got to interact with the world. But you don't have to be of the world. You can guard against those associations that damage your walk with Christ. These are three: financial, work-related, and people who are breathing insurgency. Guard against them. And when you start seeing it, get free, or get up and work again, or get away, so that they don't harm your walk with Christ. That would be wise. And that would be what comes from looking to Christ and recognizing the value of the association you have with Him and with the cloud of witnesses that's gone on before. Amen. Heavenly Father, help us to be wise in our relationships. We can't always just ignore the reality of them, but we can guard against people that would be harmful to us. Help us be wise in doing that. In our homes, in our businesses, in our schools, even in our churches. Help us be wise with the associations that we form, so that we can walk free with You in service. Amen.